This morning is Bernalis against Mercy Health Systems.
May it please the court, my name is Russell Jones. I represent Dr. Wilson Bernalis in this matter. Appellant. This case is before the court when the district court judge, Judge Shabazz, granted defendant appellee's motion for summary judgment. The court found that Mr. Bernalis did not establish a prima facie case for the indirect discrimination burden shifting under that analysis. Judge Shabazz also ruled that the pretext argument that Mr. Bernalis was to assert, he also didn't satisfy that prong. The prima facie argument is simple. It's been set forth, I think it's well-settled law, that there's four prongs that need to be satisfied. Number one, that Mr. Bernalis is a member of a protected class. That's undisputed. Number two, that Mr. Bernalis was meeting the legitimate business expectations of the defendant. Now, that is disputed by the appellee, but I think what we look at is the qualifications of the individuals. And what we're talking about is the licensing requirements of a medical doctor. Appellee argues that because he wasn't going to obtain his license by the end of his second year of residency, as required by the hospital, that he wasn't meeting the qualifications at the end of his first year of residency, and so they didn't re-up his contract for the second year. What's telling here, though, is that we have other doctors, we actually have six doctors in this residency program, and including Ms. Bernalis, four of them did not have their license by the end of the first year, but it was anticipated they would get it at the end of the second year. The third prong is that there was an adverse employment.
His record was much worse than anybody else's as far as these test failures, wasn't it?
Pardon me?
I said his test failures were much more prevalent than the test failures of anybody else.
Your Honor, that's true that Mr. Bernalis did have an examination history that was different than the other people indicated in under the fourth prong, which is the similarly situated. And I think the second and fourth prong sort of go together here. We have Dr. Dobson and Dr. Giles, who are Caucasians, and then we have Dr. Quotas, who is an Indian native. And their test scores and examination history, you're right, was not as bad as Mr. Bernalis. But what is telling is they had the exact same amount of time to complete their three-step process, as did the other doctors.
But if it's not the same test history as the others, don't you lose on the similarly situated prong?
Well, I don't think so. And the reason being is the primary prongs under the similarly situated test are that they have the same job description, which they do, that they have the same standards, which they do, the same supervisor, which they did, Dr. Lomas. And then the last prong, which is the same education, same training, and same qualifications. And I think we're hanging our hat on, or the appellee's hanging their hat on qualifications. But Mr. Bernalis had the same opportunity and ability to get those qualifications, which was his medical license, by the end of his second year of residency. He had the ability to get that the same as Dr. Dobson, the same as Dr. Giles. So because he has different examination history and a poor examination history, for that matter, doesn't mean he wasn't going to get his medical license at the end of his second year. In fact, Dr. Loomis concluded in his affidavit that it would have taken him at least 2 years to pass all three steps of the examination process, and therefore he wasn't going to be able to get it at the end of his second year. He was never afforded that opportunity, Your Honor. I mean, quite frankly, he had the same amount of time as the other doctors did. He, not only that, he had passed all three steps, granted not within the 7 years as required by the code for a doctor to be licensed, but he'd shown an ability to pass all three steps of the examination process. So the only distinguishing factor here between Dr. Dobson and Dr. Giles and Dr. Bernalis is their examination history. And I don't think that that is sufficient because we're looking at their qualifications. They were trying to achieve a qualification, all of the doctors. And none of them had their medical license by the conclusion of their first year, and yet they were all planning to get it by the end of their second year, which was the requirement of the hospital. Despite the written policy saying end of the first year, it's conceded that the hospital routinely allowed doctors by the end of the second year to achieve their license. Mr. Bernalis had the same amount of time to do that. He'd shown the ability to be able to do it. He had to pass step one and step two of the testing process to be able to do it. Those tests are administered throughout the year. So he had an academic year essentially from June of 03 through May of 04 in which to achieve those two steps. He'd already passed step one on his first attempt. He'd failed step one three times and passed on his fourth time, but now he could have taken it a fifth time and have passed either in September or December of 03 or then again in March of 04. He had those opportunities in which to meet those qualifications. And so I think these individuals are similarly situated for that, for those reasons. Then we look at the pretext argument, and the Our Lady case is cited by appellee as the indicating that it's both acceptable that licensing requirements be a distinguishing factor for similarly situated, but they also use it for the fact that they didn't establish pretext in that case. Well, in Our Lady, what we had is we had two individuals that were seeking a social worker position. The social worker position requires that you have some clinical experience. At that time, the plaintiff was a African-American male who did not submit the documentation for the clinical experience. A Caucasian applicant did not submit that same work, but he had a master's degree, and so he didn't have to submit to that. There were different requirements for the individuals in the Our Lady case. In this case, Mr. Bernalis, Dr. Dobson, Dr. Gillies all had to pass the same test. There was no different requirements for either of them to be licensed physicians. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Thank you.
Mr. Shorter.
May it please the court, Thomas Shorter, on behalf of the appellee Mercy Health System. I would like to briefly hit on three particular issues for the court, one which was not addressed by the appellant, and that was an issue raised by us in our initial brief to this court, and it is the issue about whether or not the appellant has complied with Rule 28 as it applies to their appeal. And in particular, I just want to make two brief points. One, Rule 28 requires the appellant to cite to the appropriate facts that the court is to rely upon in its review. And indeed, in this case, what we have is the appellant put forth one single document to the court, and in this case, it was the district court opinion. In fact, the appellant certified that to this court that that was the only document relevant in accordance with Seventh Circuit Rule 30D. Our position on this is that this is a matter that is subject to de novo review before this court, so the district court opinion is not to be given deference. Therefore, when we look at the district court opinion, it's not required to, nor did it in this case, actually give citations to the record underneath the district court's decision. So by only citing to that document through their appeal, they've left the court to search for facts. And in fact, they left us to search for facts, which was why the appellee in this case prepared a supplemental appendix for the court. Similarly, when it comes to the issue about legal citations, a brief of the appellant provides a number of, does do citations to some cases, but in our view, only cites to general principles of law, but does not go further as Rule 28 would require to show how those cases support their contentions. And there are contentions in this case that the district court was wrong, that USMLE history of the appellant was something that made him dissimilar from any of the other individuals on his prima facie case. On the issue of similarly situated, there is no dispute on the standards that would apply. However, when we get to the issue of some basic facts, and in some ways this ties into the Rule 28 issue I just raised, it's important to note that in appellant's brief, they give no citation to the record where it indicates what the race or national origin is of the other individuals that they've pointed to as similarly situated. We've searched through that record, and it does indicate, at least by my review of that, that Dr. Cutis is in fact an Indian, and his national origin is from India, someone obviously within the protected class. But both Dr. Hobson and Dr. Gillies, it appears from our review of the record, to be Caucasian. However, I'm unable to locate in the record the national origin of Dr. Hobson. The only reference in the record regarding Dr. Gillis is that his national origin is from Iowa, which I will presume to be of United States origin. So a basic point regarding Rule 28 facts again. Now, similarly situated, the district court in this case found that Dr. Bernalis's USMLE history, an undisputed fact that he had numerous failures, that his step one score was too old, that his step two score was too old, that he had failed step three more than the normal allowed number of times. In this case, he'd failed it at least four times, making him subject to additional scrutiny of the board. Nowhere in the record does Dr. Bernalis point to any other individual who has that USMLE examination history. That, in our view, makes him unable to point to anyone else as similarly situated. We did, of course, in our brief, cite to the EEOC versus Our Lady case, and I think this case is, in fact, instructive for the court. While the issue of similarly situated arose in the context of a pretext argument before this court, the court noted that there was a distinguishing factor between the two individuals in Our Lady, and it was their ability to sit for the examination to get licensed. One individual having a master's, one individual not. It was a different background that made them dissimilar. That is very analogous to the case now before the court. Dr. Bernalis has a USMLE history that shows significant failures and concerns. No other individual in the court or in the appellant's brief is pointed to as having those same issues, and that certainly formed the basis of the district court's opinion. This does go hand in hand with the issue of job qualifications. The prima facie case, as appellant indicated, does require that the individual be able to meet the legitimate work expectations and qualifications of the employer. Here, Mercy had an undisputed rule. They wanted physicians to be licensed no later than the end of the second year. That's something that's evaluated by looking at individuals' performance technically as a physician, how they're doing in their rotations, but also how they're doing on USMLEs. Are they likely to be eligible and able to complete all the licensure requirements by the end of that second year? Again, the USMLE history problems are undisputed in this case. Dr. Bernalis had significant problems, and Mercy made a determination in this case that those problems prevented him from meeting their legitimate expectations. Finally, we get to the issue of pretext. And this is, in many ways, as critical as any of the other matters. When we get to the bottom of this case, what it's really about is Dr. Bernalis wanted more time. He wanted an ability to prove that he could do it. Mercy makes a significant investment in resident physicians. They employ them. They pay them. This is not physicians coming to Mercy and paying tuition. There is state funding that Mercy receives for having residents in the program. So, of course, they have to make assessments about when is it worth it to continue to have someone in the program based upon their likelihood of success, whether that may be because they are seeing technical deficiencies or whether it is USMLE problems. It's undisputed. Mercy contacted the state of Wisconsin, Department of Regulation and Licensing. The Department of Regulation and Licensing identified significant concerns, and the record reflects that they indicated that it would be difficult for Dr. Bernalis to complete the USMLE requirements. In fact, the affidavit of the State of Wisconsin employee indicates that Dr. Bernalis himself indicated to her that he was concerned that it would be difficult to complete those steps and allow him to be licensed by the end of the second year. At the end, we're left with a business judgment. Mercy made a determination that given the significant USMLE failures of Dr. Bernalis, that it was not going to continue to have him in the residency program. Dr. Bernalis asserts we should have given him a chance, we should have given him more time, But what they are doing through that assertion is questioning Mercy's business judgment, something that this court has routinely declined to do in the context of Title VII cases. In fact, perhaps Dr. Bernalis would have been able to complete those USMLE steps. That's not critical, because as long as Mercy believed its determination, which there is no evidence to the contrary in this case, then its decision is to be upheld, even if that decision was foolish, trivial, without basis, or ultimately shown to be false. That's not the standard. Dr. Bernalis has shown no evidence or facts which indicate to this court that Mercy's proffered reason in this case, which was legitimate and non-discriminatory, was a falsehood or a lie. There's nothing to substantiate that. Accordingly, we would ask that the Court of Appeals affirm the district court's decision in this case. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Shorter. Anything further, Mr. Jones?
Yes, Your
Honor. With respect to the issue of pretext, counsel argues that Dr. Bernalis is seeking more time. He's not. He's seeking the exact amount of time that Mercy has allowed all of its residents, and that is, by the end of his second year, he'd be licensed. The other thing we're looking at is, in Gordon versus United States, this court held that inconsistencies in the application of a policy can call into question the legitimacy or the honest belief of the employer. In this case, we're saying there's inconsistent application. The application was, by the end of the second year, Dr. Bernalis get his medical license. They didn't give him that opportunity, but they afforded the exact same opportunity to the other doctors, Dr. Giles and Dr. Dobson. And by that alone, I think that raises a genuine issue of fact that should go to the trier of fact. This was, again, at the summary judgment stage of the proceedings. This case has an issue of fact with respect to the issue of pretext, and I think that the court should remand this case back to the trial court and allow Mr. Bernalis his day in court to prove that this was not an honest belief by Dr. Loomis, that this was racially motivated. At a minimum, the hospital and Dr. Loomis acted too soon. If Dr. Bernalis did not get his license at the end of his second year, I think it's without question a legitimate reason not to continue him. He didn't meet the qualifications as set forth in his residency requirements. But they didn't do that. What they did is they said, Dr. Bernalis, you don't get to continue, and other doctors who are in the same situation as you don't have performance problems. The only issue we have is your licensing. We don't think you're going to get it. And that was premature, and they didn't afford him that opportunity. And that raises the inference that their actions were, in fact, discriminatory. And for that reason, we ask that you reverse the holding of the district court and that you remand the case to trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. We'll hear our